Well, it is really good to see everybody today. This is our last Sunday of 2013. The time we meet next week, it will be a new year. Always around this time of year, I see people make a lot of comments about how excited they are for the changing of the calendar. I see comments like this: finally, a new year. I've really needed this. These are the sorts of people that want to put something behind them. They're ready for a fresh start. People even use the term, surely 2014 will be better than last year. I get that one a lot. See that on Facebook a lot, where people make some kind of comment about how excited they are. People will say something like, surely 2014 is going to be better than last year. They seem to say that every single year, don't they? I love the fresh start of a new year, as if there's some kind of power in January, or as if there's some kind of magical attributes to getting a brand new calendar. So in this lesson today, I want to talk about the new year, the changing of the calendar. Let's start with the question, was last year really so bad? I frequently see people make fun of this last year, 2013 or 2012 or 2011, and I see it every year. And it seems like it's the same people every year who make some kind of comment about the previous year. And they're so excited about the fresh start of January 1st. But I see it every year. It's very easy to write off last year if the bad experiences were very, very memorable. And yet, every single one of those bad experiences was an opportunity for us to learn something. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16, and notice what the apostle says there about the bad experiences that he faced in his life. In 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 16, he says, therefore, we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Now, I think what he's saying is we have a hard time being distracted by the temporal things because we are temporal beings. We live in time. That's what the word temporal means, time-based. Because everything about our lives is time-based. We measure everything in half-hour segments or days and months and years. How long have you been married? How long have you worked at a job? How old are your kids? We have a hard time looking beyond those temporal things, don't we? We have a hard time going beyond just what we see in front of us in the day-to-day activities and see that there might be something eternal going on in the background. And so Paul says, we're not focusing on the temporal. We're not focusing on the momentary light affliction that we observe around us. But really what we need to look for is the eternal component of things. The weight of glory that is being prepared for us by all the things that we're experiencing in this life. So yes, the bad things that happened in 2013 might be very memorable to you. But you're only looking at the surface. If that's all you remember from 2013, if that's the only lesson that you take away from last year. Job also had a very bad year. You remember one time in Job 1, he had a very, very bad year, but he never might have grown into his thinking in chapter 42. I said this a couple weeks ago, actually, in another lesson. We look at Job 1 and 2, and we look at how awful things were, and how he lost everything. Trust me, your worst year cannot compare to Job's worst day. He had one day that would make all of our years pale in comparison. He lost his kids. He lost all of his possessions. He lost his home. He lost everybody that he cared about. And when all was said and done, even his own spouse said, curse God and die. That's a bad year. And he was a good man, too. But Job 42 reveals a lesson that he needed to learn along the way. As good a man as he was, as righteous a man as he was, there was a part of his knowledge that was incomplete. And he gets to chapter 42 and verses 1 through 6 and he says, essentially, I get it now. I get it now. I learned something about God that I didn't know before. And if it wasn't for his bad experiences, he never would have come to that conclusion in chapter 42. He always would have had something in his wisdom, something in his understanding of God that was missing. And it was his bad experiences that taught him that. And I think we need to really ask ourselves, was 2013 really that bad? Because it's very easy to pick and choose out of your memories the bad things that happened to you without remembering a lot of the good things. Naomi did the same thing in the book of Ruth. Let's go to Ruth and notice a couple of details about Naomi's conclusion of her bad year. She had a bad year also. Naomi goes to Moab with all of her family, her husband. She has two sons as well. And while they're in the land of Moab, her husband dies. Both of her sons die as well. And so she comes back to her home in Bethlehem in chapter 1 in the second half. And I always imagine, you know how when you go on a vacation and you kind of just, it just doesn't go as well as you planned? And they have those shirts that said, you know, like, I went to so-and-so, I went to the Olympics, I went to Las Vegas, I went to so-and-so, and all I got was this t-shirt. I was picturing Naomi coming home from Moab saying, I went with my family to Moab and all I got was this daughter-in-law. She leaves with a husband and two sons and she comes back with a daughter-in-law in tow. Really, technically not even a daughter-in-law anymore since Ruth's husband was dead. There was no legal or familial relationship between these two people that should have kept them together. And yet Ruth was so devoted to her that she follows her all the way home and she says, your people are my people, your God is my God. And yet Naomi comes home in verse 19 and her conclusion in verse 20 when the women say, is this Naomi? How haggard must a person look for them to go, is that Naomi? Wow, she looks bad. Wow, Moab was hard on Naomi. Her conclusion in verse 20 is, do not call me Naomi, which means sweet. Call me bitter, which means bitter, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? Oh, and that's Ruth back there, carrying my luggage. I was wondering how Ruth feels. When Naomi comes home and says, I went out full and I came back empty, and Ruth's standing back there going, hi, I'm Ruth. All Naomi saw from her bad year, so to speak, was the bad experiences. All she remembered was the negative. And I'm not trying to be unsympathetic to her. If you lost your spouse and your kids, you'd have a bad year also, and you'd have a hard time focusing on the good things also. But in focusing on the bad, she missed the good. She missed that she had gained a daughter. She lost that other, but she gained a daughter. And she didn't know that the end of the story was going to turn out the way it does. You remember the women of Bethlehem. At the end of everything, when Ruth marries Boaz and she has kids, you remember what the women of Bethlehem say to Naomi. They say, this Ruth, this daughter-in-law of yours, she turned out to be better to you than all the other stuff that you might have lost, better to you than even seven sons would have been. But Naomi couldn't see that because all she focused on was the bad. And her conclusion was, God abandoned me. God cursed me. If 2013 was a bad year, it's very easy for you to come to the same conclusion that God has cursed me somehow without ever knowing how 2014 might actually turn out. You might read Ruth chapter 1 and think, this is a sad story. But by the time you get to the end of the book, you realize, oh, this is actually a very happy story. Your life might be the same way. Oh, the power of the almighty calendar. When I see people talking about, oh, I'm so glad it's finally January 1st. When I hear people say, oh, I've always needed this fresh start, a new year. I want to hand them a calendar and say, bow before it. Bow down before the almighty calendar. Oh, what power the calendar must have. I want to ask him, really, how does switching calendars change anything about your life? What is really the difference between December 31st and January 1st? And they say, oh, it's a symbolic difference. Well, I get that. I know it's a symbolic difference. But I think we put so much stock into the new year that we forget there's a lot of things that we probably should change today. Don't save it for January 1st. Don't get all excited about the fresh start of January 1st. You realize that God gives you a fresh start every day. He gives you a fresh start every moment. You don't have to wait for some symbolic moment to change or to realize that your life could turn out to be very different from what it's supposed to be. Really, the new year promises you absolutely nothing. It promises you absolutely nothing. You approach 2014 with so much optimism and excitement, but 2014 has not promised you anything. It could be bad or worse. I've always liked the way Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 1 puts it when he talks about what awaits us in the future. In Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 1, he says, "For I have taken all this to my heart and explained it that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him." You wake up today, anything awaits you. You have no idea what is going on, what is going to happen today, tomorrow, a year from now, or 10 years from now. Anything awaits you. Go to Proverbs 16 and verse 9. Take this idea a little bit further. In Proverbs 16 and verse 9, the writer says, "The mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps." When people talk about the new year, they use phrases like, "This is finally going to be my year. This is going to be the year I take life by the horns. This is the year I'm finally going to accomplish that, achieve that. This is the year I'm finally going to face my fears, overcome obstacles. I'm going to go skydiving in 2014. Well, the mind of man plans his way all day long, but the Lord directs his steps. You can say 2014 is going to be a lot of things, but that doesn't mean it will be. You can say all day long that 2014 is your year. That doesn't mean anything, though. You don't even know what tomorrow will bring. Proverbs 27 and verse 1. "Don't boast about tomorrow, for you do not even know what a day may bring forth." Did you plan on 2013 being bad? Nobody really does, do they? We're planning on 2014 being like your year. Rah, 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 the year of Ryan. Did you plan on 2013 being bad, though? And that's what I don't want to be a stinker or anything. Because, you know, there's those kinds of people out in the world that are stinkers. They always throw mud on everything. I don't want to be that kind of person. But when people say, "Oh, man, I'm so excited about 2014. I want to say, "Well, were you just as excited about 2013? And were you just as excited about 2012? And were you just as excited about every single year?" And it's like we're always, every year that comes along, we're always thinking, this is going to be the year. This is going to be the big one. This is where everything's going to go my way. It's not like you planned on 2013 being bad. And if it was a bad year, how do you know 2014 is going to be any better? Our contentment should never be wrapped up in earthly conditions. Go to Philippians chapter 4, a text we know pretty well, but let's read it now. Philippians chapter 4, and notice what the writer says there. "Not that I speak from want," he says in verse 11, "for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." And if you're thinking 2014 is going to be your year, then you're not thinking like Paul did in Philippians 4. We get so wrapped up in the earthly conditions that surround us that becomes the measurement of a good year or a bad year. Did you have a good year? Well, what's involved in a good year? You got a raise or you got a new job. You bought a house or you made some big improvement on your current house. You got a good diagnosis. You're cancer-free. Your kids are healthy. Somebody graduated. Somebody got engaged. Somebody got married. Somebody had a baby. Those are all earthly conditions that we look at and say, this was a good year by superficial standards. And what makes a bad year? Well, you lost a job. You lost money. You lost a home. You lost a loved one. And the diagnosis did not turn out to be very good. You didn't beat the cancer. And that's a bad year. And yet here's Paul coming along saying, you give me any of that stuff, my contentment is the same. Living in abundance or want, living in good conditions or poor conditions, with wealth or with poverty, doesn't matter. My contentment remains the same. Why? Because contentment cannot be based on earthly conditions. A little secret for you. Every condition in this life is temporary. Every single one. You say, what about marriage? Nope. Marriage is temporary also. If one or both of you passes away, marriage is over. That's it. Marriage is done. Even marriage is not permanent. There is absolutely nothing about this life that is permanent. No condition that we face on this planet. The sad thing, I think, for people who want 2014 to be the best year of their life, the sad thing is, all the good things that are going to happen to you in 2014 are not permanent. Just like all the bad things that might happen to you in this year are not permanent. We're full of peaks and valleys in this life. We hit the peaks, and almost just as soon as you get used to living on top of the peak, things start to fall apart for you. And you never know how deep that valley goes until you hit rock bottom. And even then, God might hand you a shovel and say, it's going to get worse. Dig a little deeper. If you think 2014 is going to be the best year of your life, I have a very sad thing for you to think about. 2015 is not going to compare that. I mean, you think about that. We're like, this is going to be the best year of my life. Well, like, what if you live for like 40 more years after 2014? Does that mean that all of them are going to like get worse? Is 2014 going to be like the peak, the best that it's ever going to be? And then you live for 40 more years after that, and they're all kind of like downers because 2014 was the best year of your life. I don't think I want 2014 to be the best year of my life if that's the case, because 2015 doesn't have any hope then. As long as my contentment is wrapped up in my earthly conditions, I'm always going to have this nagging feeling in the back of my mind that all of this stuff is temporary. The great job that you got won't last forever. The youth, the energy, the vitality that you have as a young man or young woman, that won't last forever either. Your marriage won't last forever. Your kids will not be babies forever. They will not be toddlers. They will not be children. They will not be teenagers forever. They're going to grow up and they're going to leave. Every condition is temporary. And I think Paul would have a lot to say that if your contentment is wrapped up in the temporary things of this life, you are going to see so much emotional variation that you won't be able to handle it. Planning or assuming anything about the future is a dangerous game anyway. We've read James chapter 4 a number of times. We even studied it last quarter, but in James chapter 4, beginning in verse 13, the writer makes a very good point here. He says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we shall go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. You could fill in the blank and say, come now, you who say, I'm going to lose all this weight in 2014 and I'm going to learn a new skill, I'm going to learn a new trade, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to get a new job, I'm going to get married. I say, come now, you who say such things. You don't even know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. You want temporary? That puff of steam is about as temporary as it gets. And he says, that's life. It's a puff of steam. That's it. It's a puff of steam. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. You can't plan for anything in this life. Ecclesiastes 9, verses 11 and 12 makes that abundantly clear. We're just fish caught in a barrel, birds caught in a trap. The race is not always to the swift. The battle is not always to the strong. Wealth is not always to the discerning. You can plan on 2014 being all kinds of things, but that doesn't mean anything. So what is your hope for 2014? What do you want out of this year? Some people want to lose weight. Some people want to learn to play the piano. Some people want to get out of a bad relationship. Some people want to make a bad relationship better. What is your hope for 2014? Our hope is not for a good year, but for an eternal solution to all suffering. 2014 is going to be what it is. It'll be what it is. Just like 2013 is what it is. And my hope is not for a good year, because what really makes up a good year? Bad things will happen to me this year, just like good things will. And I've always felt like in life they tend to balance out. Maybe you disagree with that, but I've always felt like things tend to balance out if you look at them objectively. Go to Colossians chapter 3. Jacob did a good job reading it already this morning, earlier in our worship. But in Colossians chapter 3, I think that Paul has something to say about where your focus is. What do you want out of life? If then you have been raised up with Christ, he says in Colossians 3:1, keep seeking, what does he say? Keep seeking a better job. Keep seeking a love interest. Keep seeking, what does he say? Keep seeking the things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. The things that happen to me in this life don't make up whether I'm having a good year or a bad year. Really, a good year is defined in a very different way. Consider, what kind of year should I actually want? I should want a year that challenges me. I don't want to have an easy year. We're very mundane people. You're thinking, I'm not mundane. I do all kinds of fun things. No, for the most part, humans are very, we like routine. We get comfortable with things. And I think a lot of us want to have a year that leaves us feeling comfortable. We want to have a year where nothing's rocked. Nothing's changed. I want to have a year where I continue to have success. I want to have a year where my kids kind of stay static and they stay the same. I want to have a year where I don't get any older, or I don't get any fatter, or I don't get any grayer. I want to have a year where things pretty much don't challenge me or push me. But I think the opposite should actually be true of the Christian. I want to have a year that pushes me really hard. I want to have a year that challenges me to become something more than I am right now. I want to be a better Christian and a better husband and a better father and a better friend to all of you on December 31st, 2014 than I am right now. And you won't get that if you're not pushed. You won't get that if you're not challenged. Go to 2 Timothy 4, verse 7. Look at the way Paul describes life here in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 7. He says, I fought the good fight. I finished the course. I have kept the faith. Does that sound like an easy life to you? Do you think Paul looked back on his life and felt like it was a waste of time because he was constantly pushed and challenged to be something more than he is? On the screen, I've got Joshua 24, verses 14 and 15. We know that section of Scripture very well, don't we? Consider in Joshua chapter 24 what Joshua says to the people of Israel as they're facing their challenges in verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that was after a lot of experiences in the rest of the book of Joshua. Joshua didn't have an easy time in his life. He was pushed, he was challenged, he was forced to grow at every turn. There was nothing about Joshua's time as leader of Israel that was easy. And at the end of it all, he says, but as for me and my house, we're going to serve God. You serve whatever you want. Do whatever you feel like. Take the easy path in life. The Amorites won't challenge you. The gods beyond the river, they're not going to want to change you. You take up the morals of the pagan nations around you, and you will never be pushed in this life to become more than what you are. But if you serve God, God will poke you with a goad. God will force you along. God will kick you when you lie down when you shouldn't be, and He'll force you to stand up and keep working even when you don't want to. God will challenge you. And I want a year that challenges me. I want 2014 to be a year where I face and overcome obstacles. I also want a year that surprises me. Surprise me, God. Just surprise me. I like to go to a potluck and have no idea what's going to be there. You know, I don't like themes with potluck. I don't want to for this potluck it's going to be all German food, or this potluck is going to be all fried food. Actually, that's every potluck, isn't it? I want to go to a potluck and I'm going to be like, surprise me. Oh! And I want there to be something at a potluck that I like thought, you know, I never would have thought to bring that, but that was the highlight of my day. I want 2014 to be a year that surprises me. I don't want to plan it. I don't want to say, in 2014, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have all of my New Year's resolutions met by February. I don't want to have a year that goes as expected. I want to have one that really, really throws me for some curveballs. 2005 was a good year for me. It didn't go as expected. In April of 2005, I didn't know that Rebecca existed. And I could never have planned for her existence. I could never have assumed or planned or prepared in any way. In May of 2005, my life completely changed. I will say that for all the planning that we can do, for all the things that we wish would happen to us in this life, I could never have planned for a better marriage. I could never have planned for kids that challenge me in a good way, the way that my kids do. I could never have planned for a congregation of Christians here at Monte Vista that expects the best out of me and holds me accountable and supports me in my work. I could never have planned for the way my life turned out. And I'll tell you what, the way my life has turned out is a whole lot better than anything I could have written or scripted. And that's with all the bad things. That's with all the challenges. That's with the obstacles. With every danger, with every failure, I could not have planned for a better life for myself than what has happened. You want to plan 2014 out? I guarantee you, you cannot plan how good a year can be if you trust in God. We don't know the future. Jeremiah 10, verse 23, Proverbs 16, 9, like we've already read. The heart of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. You don't know what's waiting for you. Do you want to script your own life, or do you want to trust in a God who is so much more awesome than you are? Do you want to trust in a God who sees beyond this realm? And I want to have a year that reminds me that Judgment Day is coming. Remember, every single year that you live is a year closer to judgment. Every day that you live, every moment, every breath you take is one breath closer to facing God on the judgment day. I don't want to forget that in 2014. I don't want to assume that I'll have a 2015. I don't want to assume that I'll have any time after tomorrow or any time after right now even. I don't want to assume anything about that. What will I have to say about 2014 then? What am I going to have to say about what this year has done, what I've accomplished, what I've done, what I've seen and heard and said? Remember something about every year that you live, whether it's 2013 or 2014 or anything beyond this, that God so bountifully gives to you. That everything you do is contributing to an overall assessment of who you are. In Revelation 20, consider in verse 11. And I saw on a great white throne, and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books, according to their deeds. Now, I don't believe that we are literally going to stand before God and He's going to read a giant book and like recite our life's events. I think that this is meant to give us a sense of your life is going to be looked at and judged as a whole. Everything you do is contributing to an overall assessment of who you are on the judgment day. You will either be righteous or unrighteous. You will either be a lamb on the right or a goat on the left. And everything you do, both big and small, every word that passes between your lips and every day that you live is contributing to the overall life story that God is going to open up on the judgment day and say, so let's see what you did. When he gets to the chapter about 2014, what is he going to say that you did? How did you use this year that he gave to you? Assuming, of course, that he lets us live all the way through the year. What is going to be in that chapter? Was 2014 nothing but a year that you got a better job or a worse job? Were you beat cancer or lost to cancer? Were you had a kid or saw a kid grow up and move away? Is that all that 2014 is going to be? Or is God going to thumb his way through the book of life and see that 2014 was the year that you finally beat that sinful habit? That 2014 was the year that you finally committed yourself to serving him the way you ought to? That 2014 was the year that you were baptized into his body? That 2014 was the year that you stopped playing church and got serious about living the Christian life every single day of the week? What is he going to see in that chapter about 2014? And that will determine if it was a good year or if it was a bad year. You might not have tomorrow at all. We're not at 2014 yet. We might not even get there. We might find ourselves facing God before the end of the invitation song that we're about to sing. Hebrews chapter 3 makes a good point. It was up on the screen a moment ago, but in Hebrews chapter 3, the writer of Hebrews is quoting one of the Psalms as he says, today, if you hear the Lord's voice, do not harden your hearts as the Israelites did in the day of the wilderness, in the day of testing. Do not harden your hearts. Today, if you hear His voice. Mark 16:16 says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. You're hearing the voice of God right now. Not my voice, but God speaking through the Scriptures, begging you, pleading with you to become a Christian right now. 2013 is not over, friends. You still have a couple days to make this year count for something. So please, please, obey the gospel. Become a Christian. And if you have any need at all spiritual, then please come forward as we stand and sing.